Today is the 25th anniversary of Mount St. Helens and the eruption on that volcano. If you were alive for that event, you probably remember the images of that day. The mountain shifting as the side of the peak exploded, clouds of ash and steam billowing into the sky. For those close to the eruption, it was an unforgettable morning. Here are some of the voices from that day.
It just started blowing, and it just looked like the whole top of the mountain just exploded into one black ball, and it just kept growing and growing.
Everything is covered with either white or gray ash. There are tree falls as much as 15 miles away from the top of the mountain.
Mudslides have already created a 20-foot high wall of water on one river. Evacuations of nearby towns are continuing.
All of the roads in eastern Washington are closed. Schools are closed. Airports are closed.
Five people are now reported dead as a result of this morning's eruption.
Some of these people were just killed in their tracks. They were just killed right on the spot. They must have just literally had their lives snuffed right out from inside of them.
In fact, the eruption killed 57 people in all and displaced thousands. NPR's Howard Berkus is in Eugene, Oregon. He was, anyway, on May 18, 1980. That was just over 100 miles away from the mountain. Joins us today from Salt Lake City, Utah. Welcome, Howard.
Thank you, Frank.
So tell us about that day.
It was a remarkable day for me and thousands, perhaps millions of other people who will never forget it. As you said, I was a good distance away, but when Mount St. Helens exploded, the boom that resulted reached me down in Eugene, Oregon. It shook the A-frame that I lived in, got me popped up out of bed, and I sensed something had happened. Ran down to the radio station where I worked at the time, started looking at the wire copy, and the wire writers were struggling to describe what happened. I remember one piece of wire copy. In fact, I have it right here. I saved it. That just started with the word "awesome." Mm. We struggled. We all struggled to describe what it looked like, what the destruction was like when we finally got close up to see it, and it was difficult for all of us. I remember Jimmy Carter, the president at the time, took a bunch of us up in helicopters to fly around the mountain a few days later, and when we landed, he was asked, Mr. President, what did you see? And he said, well, you know, somebody said it looked like the moon, but the moon looks like a golf course compared to what it's like up there.
Well, and as difficult as it was and as shocking as it was to see the site, the eruption itself wasn't a total shock. We'd been covering this for months, right? I mean, you'd been on the story for a while.
The mountain first started, you know, burping and hissing. And shaking actually began on March 27th of 1980. What was a surprise was not an eruption. I mean, not only had there been these smaller eruptions and plumes of ash coming out of the summit of Mount St. Helens, but scientists had noticed that the mountain was bulging, and bulging at a significant amount per day. And it was obviously pressure was building, and the thing was going to blow at some point. What was unexpected, though, was that it blew out sideways in what they now call a lateral blast. That had not been understood to be part of the history of Mount St. Helens or many other volcanoes around the world. And so that wasn't expected. You know, they drew a line, they called it the red zone around the mountain, and they said this is the danger zone. And that was based on the idea of a blast straight out the top. Right. Well, that lateral blast out the side sent ash and searing red-hot gases and 20-some square miles of rock shooting out the side of the mountain at hundreds of miles an hour, 17 miles away, way beyond the boundaries of that red zone. And in fact, nearly all the people who were killed were outside the red zone in areas that were theoretically safe.
All right. Well, we're taking phone calls now on this 25th anniversary of the eruption of Mount St. Helens. You can call us at 800-989-8255. Did you see it? Were you a part of it? Were you affected by it? Pear is on the line from Portland. Hi, Pear.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Yeah, I remember that day very well. My sweetie and I, we later got married that year. We were on this kind of a clothing optional beach on Soli Island, which is on the Columbia River. And I remember we should have had a camera because we had this vivid image three or four naked people on the beach watching this big, huge mushroom cloud looming over them. You know, it's got a very primitive sort of feel to it.
Now, Perry, a mountain explodes, and your first image is of naked people on the beach?
Well, they're standing on the beach watching this big mushroom cloud.
You got the mushroom.
About 10 miles high or something.
Now, let me ask you, Perry, again, this mountain had been rumbling and making noise for a few months. Were you expecting that kind of, I mean, did you think it was going to happen sooner or later, or it's just going to blow over?
I think we're kind of a little surprised. But, you know, it's like one of those things, you know, when it does happen, you say, yeah, right, you know. But until then, you think, well, life is pretty normal.
And did you realize right away what had happened?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We knew it was mountain was blowing. And, you know, it seemed from where we were, it was pretty harmless. You know, we were about 12 miles away with a river between us.
Well, Per, thank you very much for your call. Yeah, go ahead, Howard.
Frank, that's also because the prevailing winds, or at least the winds at that moment, were blowing in a different direction to the north and to the east. So people to the south, where Per was, didn't experience that ashfall right away. But it was a far different story to the north and to the east. The ashfall was so thick that it completely blotted out the sun in places as far as several hundred miles away. And the ashfall fell like heavy snow. It forced the closure of roads. It forced the closure of airports. It forced the closure of schools. It was a phenomenal event that Per and thousands of others could watch without much impact on one side of the mountain, but people on another side were greatly affected.
They got
their
the
lives
message.
Completely changed.
Karen is on the line from San Diego. Hi, Karen.
Hi. How are you?
Good.
Good. Well, I have a comment, and it's we were camping on the Yakima River to the north side and east of Mount St. Helens, and the explosion was while we were breaking camp. There were about 100 of us that were on a river rafting day the day prior, and we thought it was as loud as an M80 in our ears of somebody lighting off fireworks and things. Are you there? Can you
hear
me?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, good. And so my boyfriend and I were driving home to the Seattle area when we witnessed a crop duster who apparently must have flown up above a horizon and seen the orange and black clouds thundering across the horizon. It rattled him so much that he unfortunately struck power lines and crashed. My boyfriend ran to the plane, as did some rafters from the river below, and I went to the farmhouse in order to report the accident. Unfortunately, that's one of the victims that was described earlier quite a distance away because he did not survive the crash. We didn't know what had happened until we continued on the road to stop for breakfast and were advised, and then basically had the ash clouds beside us as we were heading into the Seattle area up through Snoqualmie Pass. Friends in the group did get stranded because their cars were inundated with the ash so quickly that they were inoperable as the huge snowstorm of sore ash storm arrived. So it was quite a momentous day and very unfortunate, certainly something I will never forget.
Well, Karen, thank you very much for your call.
Sure.
We are talking about Mount St. Helens 25 years after the eruption there. My guest is Howard Berkus, NPR correspondent, who was there covering, or pretty close, covering the event and the story. Howard, 57 people died as a direct result. What were some of the other consequences of this? How many people lost their homes and damage and that sort of thing?
There actually weren't many homes lost because much of the area that was directly affected was national forest land or private forest land. There were some logging camps that were wiped out, and there were some homes along the Toutle River, which had a 20-foot high wall of mud and debris heading down it. There were some homes along there that were washed away. The most significant damage was to nature, and of course the lives that were lost. And some of those deaths were, as we heard in the tape, when someone said that people's lives were just sort of snuffed out of them, they did find people whose lungs were filled with volcanic ash. There were people who were trapped by the tree fall. We're talking about, you know, typical Pacific Northwest forest, Douglas fir trees, very thick, very tall, hundreds of feet tall, all of a sudden just crashing down in a tangle that many people found impossible to escape. Their cars were obliterated in some cases. So the in terms of the human cost, it was an incredible kind of event, tragic event. The damage was in the millions of dollars, I believe, if not higher. The Columbia River was choked with ash and mud for months. It had to, they had to dig out the ash and mud to make it navigable again. And there, bridges were washed out downstream.
Quite an event.
And of course, life stood still during the ash fall. You couldn't do anything in it.
We are talking about the aftermath of Mount St. Helens 25 years later. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Frank Stachow in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. And now we're going to go to Charlie Crisafulli. Charlie Crisafulli is a biologist in U.S. Forest Service who has studied the environment and wildlife of Mount St. Helens. And Howard, I know a friend of yours. He joins us from Coldwater Ridge, the visitor's center on the side of the mountain. Welcome to the program, Charlie.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
So how does that mountain look today?
Well, the mountain is pretty clouded in. It's a typical northwest day with some sun breaks, but drips of clouds coming in and showering on us.
And a lot of people there to celebrate the, or at least mark the anniversary?
Well, I believe there are, but right now I'm actually in a more remote location, out on the debris avalanche deposit, far away from any people.
You know, just a minute ago, Howard was talking about the impact on the environment. It's been 25 years now. What kind of an assessment can you make?
Well, on all accounts, it's been quite remarkable. When we first arrived here, it was clear that the volcano had created a complex mosaic of disturbance types, but all of it looked gray and lifeless. And that's why the biggest surprise was that in many zones we saw the resurgence of life. I mean, even within days, plants began breaking through the ash crust, birds were flying in, seeds were drifting in on wind, and even frogs and toads and salamanders had emerged from these ash-choked lakes.
But no dinosaurs.
No dinosaurs.
<Okay. laughs> So that proves it. I guess that proves the theory. Tony's on the line from Austin, Texas. Hi, Tony.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, I was just going to relay kind of how it affected the Mount St. Helens affected me. I was living in a town a little bit north of Houston, Texas, and one day I came out the early morning, probably around the 20th to the 25th, somewhere in that time of May, and there was this light, almost like snow coming down, and it was covering the cars and that sort of thing, like a heavy pollen or something, but it was white. And later that day, I had heard on the news that that was ash from Mount St. Helens, and I was kind of curious how it made it out to how it made it out to Texas.
Wow.
And it was very light and fine dust. But anyway, and also one other comment, as I have been to the site about 10 or 12 years ago where they left part of the forest undisturbed around Mount St. Helens. And, if you know, I would suggest anybody go check that out if they can. It's really amazing.
All right. Thanks for the call, Tony. Howard Berkus, how widespread was the ash? How was it? This was felt globally, really, wasn't it?
It circled the globe, and there was ashfall on the east coast of the United States, some light ashfall, but it circled the globe, and I just read the other day that there still is ash in the atmosphere from the 1980 eruption, that it continues to circle the globe.
When you hear Charlie talk about the comeback of, you know, the ecosystem in that area, when you first saw that mountain, Howard, did you ever believe anything could come back? I wonder what your impression was then.
It looked like such a... It was such a devastated landscape. The trees were that weren't blown completely away were laying down on the sides of the ridges and the mountains, just laying flat, completely stripped of bark and of leaves and it didn't seem like anything could be alive. And in some places you go there now, it doesn't, on first look, it doesn't seem like anything could be alive. Charlie, you said you're down in the in the debris flow. Give us some sense of the depth of the deposits there from the volcano and what has come back there. Because even now, if, you know, just walking in there, it doesn't necessarily look like anything is alive there.
Well, in the debris avalanche where I'm at right now, the area was very hard hit. It received about 200 feet of material, which was the former summit of the volcano, that slid down this gigantic landslide and buried and scoured everything. So everything had to start anew. And right now, it's remarkable at the pace at which the recovery has occurred. There's a number of oases. I'm looking down on a pond right now that's ringed with alders, and I hear warblers singing and frogs croaking. And when you take a broader perspective and look out, you can see that it's embedded within a much more barren landscape. And so it's been very uneven, the pace at which, you know, life has come back onto the landscape.
And how about tourism? Do people sort of still go to Mount St. Helens to see it? See the damage?
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
recent activity that started in September of 2004, visitation has been up. People really are quite fond of the volcano and frequent it often.
All right. Well, Charlie, I want to thank you very much.
Hey, thanks so much.
Charlie Crisafulli is a biologist for the U.S. Park Service. He's at the Visitor Center at Mount St. Helens National Volcanic Monument, where there is a 25-year anniversary of the eruption of Mount St. Helens. And Howard Berkus, thanks a lot.
You're welcome, Frank.
NPR's Howard Berkus, who covered that eruption 25 years ago today. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Frank Stachow.